Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
You're listening to HR Power Hour, presented by CMA Career and Verrill. I'm Tawny Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is Clara Porter from PAC Maine. PAC is an acronym for Prevention Action Change, which is what Clara and her skilled team of trainers focus on when working with organizations and people of all ages. Welcome, Clara.
Thank you so much.
So, Clara, let's talk a little bit about you first. I always think it's important for our listeners to understand why you're on the radio. Why did I invite you here to speak to us about bystander intervention and understanding the work environment and the effect that it could have on culture itself and ways in which we deal with or identify or respond to either harassing or discriminatory behavior?
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. I've been in this work of violence prevention for a long time, and it's been interesting to see how it's grown and changed over time. So our work has started in empowerment self-defense, which is an approach to safety training that's all about having the awareness, having the intervention skills of verbal and physical, responding to situations, and also healing from violence. And when we take that lens and look into the workplace, a lot of what we're seeing are pieces that workers, other coworkers could be doing to support one another, to create an environment that is more welcoming and open and accepting. Of course, that needs to be supported by policies and protocols and strong leadership. But we also focus on what can we be doing as a whole organization, as a whole community, really, of workers to make our workplace more open, accepting, and welcoming and safer.
And prevention action change doesn't just work with employers, however, correct? You're also going out into schools and generally into the community. Can you talk to our listeners a little bit more about the work that you're doing outside of the work environment and kind of how that's also helping generally kind of make sure that culturally this is an acceptable, a more acceptable kind of understanding and training?
Sure. So we provide empowerment self-defense training. Those usually are intensive formats, so 4-hour class, 8-hour class, and those are everything from those key elements of awareness, verbal, physical skills, and healing. And those are generally focused on folks who would be most at risk for violence. So that would be women, trans people, non-binary people, and the LGBTQ community. Also folks with various forms of disabilities. So we've worked a lot with people who are deaf and hard of hearing in Maine, a lot of people with visual impairment or blindness, and people with developmental disabilities as well. So really trying to build both their confidence, their tools for using in a variety of different situations, because they are the most likely to be targeted for harassment, assault, and abuse.
Now, when we're talking about self-defense, I think traditionally people's minds go towards physical self-defense, towards mm-hmm. some type of martial arts or some other type of physical training.
Right.
You've additionally mentioned kind of awareness as well as verbal responses. Are those the elements that we would discuss kind of before we get to a physical aspect, or is it all going to be situation dependent and that's one of the aspects of the training itself?
Yeah, well, when we work with youth particularly, we talk about the five fingers of safety. And that's think, yell, run, fight, and tell. So fight being the fourth finger, we think and talk about the ethic of least harm. So I'm going to do physically only what I need to do to get out of a situation and no more. So we really do work on training and looking at what is the situation? Can I recognize something before it gets to a level where I would need to physically defend myself so that I can intervene and stop it before it gets to that level? But also we provide that physical training so people have those tools when and if they need them. You know, most people are, particularly women, are assaulted by someone they know, right? So it's very, very difficult to see that coming. Oftentimes it's something that progresses over time, as in the case of a relationship violence. But for certain populations and certain people, particularly Indigenous women, trans women of color, the majority of violence is coming from people they don't know. So really looking at what are the risks for different groups of people, and appropriately then giving all the tools and allowing them and saying to them, you have the power to decide what is going on in this situation, how you need to respond, and you know, using your tools for that.
So I think one of the things that listeners are probably thinking to themselves is, for Maine listeners at least, sexual harassment training is required by law for most employers, specifically with regards to manager training and then employee training, and then the requirement that there be policies and practices in place kind of more generally. What is Prevention Action Change doing that would be different from kind of the general sexual harassment training that they're either getting online or that they're checking the box with each year, I guess?
Yeah. So we looked at what's required by Maine law and also what is being offered most typically, those online trainings. And what we offer that's different is something that really is a collective experience, first of all, and it looks at those precursor types of behaviors. So what are the microaggressions around gender-based issues that we might see if we had the eyes to notice them, that we would see before something became an actionable sexual harassment complaint? So really looking at how can we better prevent and intervene early, either for ourselves or for others. And we also look at, in a very interactive way, all of our work is very interactive, we look at what are the other types of microaggressions that would be layered on top of that gender-based issue. So whether it's based on race or sexual orientation or age, social class, any of those different factors, religion. And so it's a process of raising everyone's awareness of what their colleagues and coworkers may be experiencing, and then giving them the actual tools to intervene for themselves or for someone else in the workplace.
Have you ever been asked, or has PAC ever been asked to come in and perform maybe an audit of the work environment with employees not knowing kind of the organization that you're from and what you're doing, just to get a sense as to kind of what's it like in the break room right now? What's the feel? What's the vibe, which sounds very kind of like groovy, but what's the vibe in the workplace so that you can get an understanding, especially for workplaces that are experiencing issues with regards to cultural clashes? And I say that in a more general kind of sense. Maybe they haven't specifically experienced claims of discrimination or harassment, but they definitely feel as though right now the environment isn't what they're looking for.
Sure. We haven't actually been asked to come in and do that kind of audit. What we do is we'll conduct surveys prior to the training. And so those are all confidential surveys. We don't collect anyone's email or any information that might identify who is giving us the information. And we don't share that information back with the organization as a whole block. We'll talk about trends or, you know, issue areas and that kind of thing. But by providing us with that information, it really feeds the training with a lot of scenarios. We'll collect both the positives, what is contributing to a comfortable and safer and more welcoming workplace right now, what are they currently doing, and then what are some of the factors that are barriers to that, and experiences that staff have had with one another, with clients, with vendors, with participants, and with supervisors and other bosses.
In performing those surveys, do you find kind of an equal mix of people identifying the positive and the negative? Or I know sometimes when people perform surveys or refuse to perform surveys, one of the reasons is because they're concerned that they're only going to hear the bad things, and that from a resource standpoint, some of those bad things aren't things that they can fix. Mm-hmm. When you are performing these type of surveys, are you getting a mix of results kind of generally with identifying some of the positive attributes of the culture, or does it usually focus on areas for improvement?
Actually, most people will provide both. Information on both. There's certainly people at either end of the spectrum who might be all positive all the time or all negative all the time. And so that exists in any workplace. But most frequently, you're finding a both and. So we know that it can be true that generally people can feel safe and welcome, and that in certain circumstances or with certain people, they may feel very targeted and very unwelcomed. And the flip side can be true also, that they may feel overall unwelcome, unsafe, not supported, but there may be a supervisor or some colleagues that they can reach out and talk to and really feel that support. So we get the full range.
Now, before we went on the air, you and I were talking about the work that you do in hospitality as well. From my standpoint, I look at retail and hospitality kind of generally fitting into a completely separate section just because of how much general interaction they have consistently with the public. And a lot of individuals, if they're calling me, which, you know, all of our listeners are like, well, we hope we're not calling Tawny, but when they are, right? Something I hear often is, well, we can't control the public, right? We can't control what they do. What is the expectation? What is our duty? How do we move forward? And one of the things that we often talk about is kind of making sure that it's clear to your customers or your distributors, whoever outside the organization, that the behavior is not appropriate and won't be tolerated.
Right, sure.
And that you don't need their business if that's the way they're going to act. Are there other things that an organization can do to further support that mindset?
Yeah, I think that consistency in response is particularly important. So a lot of times as employees, when we're working with customers, when we're working with participants, we have a different standard for their behavior. We set different boundaries. We are less clear about what we want and need and feel in this relationship than we might be with a colleague. But as you well know, particularly with all HR policies, but particularly when we're talking about sexual harassment, those policies apply to anyone that is interacting with that workplace. So that could be the public, that could be a vendor, and that certainly could be a coworker. So having that consistency of response really speaks to culture. When you're seeing that, when I, as a participant or a client of a particular organization, am seeing a consistent response to behavior of myself or another person, particularly if that behavior is somehow damaging or targeting in some way, then I certainly feel safer in that environment and working with that employer or that business. And it sets a really good tone.
One of the things that actually drew you and I together was an article about a brewery on the West Coast that uses yellow, red, and green cards almost, mm-hmm. in which the waitress or the bartender, whoever, and I say waitress, and that's, I should be using a gender neutral term,
server. Yeah.
But the server feels uncomfortable with the situation that is happening at the table, right? Or in a customer experience. And without giving any description, examples, having to provide a narrative of what is happening, that they're able to go to their manager and say yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And that if they say yellow, the manager is going to keep an eye on what is going on, understanding that the individual feels uncomfortable with the interaction that's occurring, with the understanding that if someone says red, that immediately the manager takes over serving and being a part of the relationship with that guest.
Right.
And if necessary, we'll ask them to leave. And I thought that was a great article because it didn't require employees to give a full narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes during sexual harassment training, or most of the times, one of the things that we talk about are triggers, right?
Sure.
And the fact that oftentimes an employee won't make a complaint regarding a behavior, whether or not it qualifies as harassment or discrimination from a legal standpoint, but they won't make it because they have fear that they're going to have to share a story or a situation that is a trigger for them.
Sure.
And during training, one of the things I know from a legal standpoint we focus on is understanding there could be a trigger here, and just hearing from the employee, it's a trigger, is going to be kind of helpful for you moving forward and gives you that sense. I'm not going to ask further questions unless I absolutely have to. Mm-hmm. Are there other tools that we can be using kind of in that same mindset, whether or not it's yellow cards for yellow, red cards type of statement or trigger or language that companies can be instituting to help with those triggering events?
Mm. Sure. One of the things that we do in these trainings is to help the group of employees that is taking the training, that's participating, to come up with their own language. So it could be a warning word like that, or it could be a series of intervention type words or phrases that they will all consistently use. And they come at them, they come at these, or they gain these phrases, this collection of phrases, through role plays, through some of the other activities that we do. And then we just keep a running list. And it becomes the language of the organization. So if I hear someone saying, "That's not okay here," you know, to someone's comment, for instance, my ears are going to prick up because I know that that's going to be related to something that we've talked about before. And I'm going to pay more attention to that. So we also talk about, rather than triggers is one word, but we also talk about activation, because of course triggers is more of an extreme reaction to something that may be reminding you of something that has happened in the past, but it's all in the spectrum of a stress reaction, and we all have them. So a lot of our work too is on noticing those in your own body, noticing those in other people's bodies, and in managing that level of adrenaline. So in the moment, how can I breathe, ground, whatever I need to do in order to respond, or if I need to remove myself, reach out to someone else for that assistance.
I want to talk more about that. We're going to take a break right now. You're listening to HR Power Hour, and our guest today is Clara Porter from PAC Maine. And we are talking about bystander intervention as well as the tools that individuals can use if they find themselves as a bystander to discriminatory or hostile behavior. We'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobsinme to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Hi, this is Derek Volk, host of The Derek Volk Show. I want to tell you about my book, Chasing the Rabbit, A Dad's Life Raising a Son on the Spectrum. My book is a rare and emotionally truthful story of my experiences as a father raising a son on the autism spectrum. When Dylan was 2 years old, my wife sat me down and said, "Something's not quite right with Dylan." My book takes you from birth to that day at age two until he was diagnosed with autism 6 years later, and then through his extremely rocky middle school years, his volatile high school life, and his challenging path to adulthood. The story has been called extremely raw and shockingly honest, and has been given 5 stars by every review on Amazon. Please go to our website, chasingtherabbit.org, to learn more about our story. That's chasingtherabbit.org.
I'm Connie Alvarez, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Our guest today is Clara Porter from PAC Maine, and earlier we were talking about the feeling or emotional response that our employees can have when an event occurs that is either hostile or has feelings of discrimination or harassment or generally an uncomfortable situation in the work environment.
Yeah.
One of the things that you focus on as an organization is something called bystander intervention. Can you tell our listeners what that is and exactly what a training on bystander intervention would look like?
Sure. So active bystander intervention really is simply inserting yourself in a situation in which you were not involved before. So it's making a choice and saying that you are the person to step in and intervene in some way. And the focus of bystander intervention needs to be increasing the safety of the person who was targeted. So our focus is not on confronting the harasser, although that may be a tactic that we use at some points. But it really is overall, let me do something to interrupt the situation so that I can increase the safety of the person who's being targeted.
Now, as you're saying this, in my mind, all I can think of is my mother saying, don't stick your nose in other people's business, right? It's not that exactly, though, correct? It's not that you're sticking your nose in someone else's business. It's that you're assisting. How about this? Why don't you define for me kind of what it is and why it's different from sticking your nose in someone else's business?
Yeah, it's really about trying to make a change, a positive change, in how people are treated in our culture and in our various communities. So we talk about, you know, having the awareness to see what different people experience as far as identity-based harassment. And identity-based harassment is basically harassment that's based on who you are or who you're perceived to be by another person. So, you know, commonly that might be around race. It might be around your national origin or perceived immigration status. It might be gender, any number of factors that could be an excuse, really, for harassment. And so when we have the ability to see that, and then we have the tools to intervene, and that's where the training comes in, because there's been a lot of study of bystander intervention, and you have to both have the awareness and you have to have done it. So you have to have practiced in safer environments where, you know, it's okay to make mistakes. And, you know, I think a lot of people have, most people have one issue or two issues that really always, they see that happening, they are going to intervene, whether it's because, you know, it happened to someone they knew in middle school or it's just something they notice. And if we can broaden our awareness to see more, then we can intervene more in safer ways. So a range of possibilities. Direct intervention is certainly possible. One of those could be direct to the harasser, and that could be calling out or naming the behavior. But it could also be calling in and inviting them to change. Oh, do you want to rephrase that? I think that came out a little wrong. It could also be direct to the person targeted. So pretending you know someone in a public situation is actually a really great intervention. So, oh, hey, Sue, I haven't seen you in so long. And you're Tawny, you're not Sue. But if you were in a situation where you were feeling targeted and threatened, you would probably also say, oh, hey, I haven't seen you in so long, too. So those great, very simple interventions, not confrontational at all, that simply assist the person in removing themselves from the situation. Other things, creating a distraction, delegating to someone else. So maybe I know someone who's better suited to intervene. I may ask them to do that, or delaying. So maybe in the moment I don't feel safe or able to do anything, or it's happening in a place or a time that I can't intervene. But afterwards, I could check in with the person targeted, or I could also check in if I know them. I could check in with the person who, you know, caused the harm. So it's a wide range of things that we can do.
So I feel as though our listeners are thinking, okay, I could foresee this happening in an open public space, whether it be a concert or a retail environment or, you know, witnessing this somewhere in public. Mm-hmm. How does this work in the work environment? Is this something that is happening in the work environment and I don't know it's happening? Should I be kind of getting involved if there's a disagreement between colleagues and coworkers? And if so, what does that look like?
Yeah, so it's less about disagreements where, you know, we can disagree on many different issues. This is more about when people are targeted, and you'll see it most clearly in various forms of harassment or in even microaggressions. So one that commonly comes up for women is when we're in a meeting and we present an idea, our own idea, and there's not much response to that. Let's say it's a mixed gender meeting. But if a male then rephrases our idea and presents it as their own, very often they'll get quite a lot of response. So, okay, if I'm a bystander to that happening, what can I do or say in that moment that assists and refocuses to the owner of that idea, you know, and rebalances?
So I think one of the great things for listeners would be if we did a couple maybe hypotheticals to get a better understanding of it. And I think the great thing for our listeners and for everyone who knows me is going to be, I'm going to let you ask the questions and I'm going to respond. And I likely am going to be wrong, I'm guessing. And the fact that I'm saying that on the air, something that's definitely going to haunt me, I think, forever. But I'm guessing that I'm not going to have the appropriate reaction in all cases. So I would love to do some hypotheticals to get a better understanding as to kind of what we should be doing.
There's, you know, and there's really no one way to do this. It's like learning a new language, as one of my colleagues says.
I'm horrible at new languages. This is a very black and white mind, and it is one of the worst things. I wish I had a language mind. I really do, but I hope this is a language that I'm going to able to learn.
Sure. And in any new language, we stumble a little bit and then we go forward. So we often will start out with responding to one-liners. So, you know, if you heard a one-liner that was crossing a boundary in some way, and then trying to come up with one line that you could respond with that says how you feel and really puts a period at the end of the sentence so that we're not getting into a discussion here, but we are, you're making yourself clear. So let's say you hear someone say something like, your coworker is super sexy. What might you say in response that puts a period at the end of the sentence and really tells them that that wasn't okay to say?
So my go-to is always, I don't think that's appropriate for the work environment.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
At the same time, I think, like, as a person, however, I want to say more because I want to say, you know, stop. Mm-hmm. Absolutely stop. But mm-hmm. I know that that's also going to elevate the situation.
It may, but it depends on the situation. And so I think being clear and setting a very clear boundary is really important in these types of situations. We don't want to be sort of squishy in our response because that doesn't give a clear idea to the person that truly that wasn't okay. So saying what you were saying, very clear, very short, saying, whoa, that's not okay. A lot of people may respond that way. Hand up. You know, there's body language involved here. Whoa, that's not okay. Is very clear as well. Anything that's short to the point and just delivers the message is really important.
I think you've just made another very good point, which is the fact that so many times people focus on the verbal aspect, and purely on the verbal aspect of harassment or discrimination or the response to it. And I've heard a multitude of times after someone says something inappropriate, well, they didn't tell me to stop. Mm-hmm. Can you tell our listeners other ways in which somebody could be telling someone to stop without verbally using those words?
Sure. So in delivering our message, our body language is as important as understanding what other people's body language may be when they're receiving this kind of negative action. So you may see someone shrink. Literally, in their body, their shoulders come together, their hands come together, they may cover themselves in some way, crossing their arms, something like that, looking down, looking away. All of those are avoidance, are the physical reactions that you may see in someone who's been targeted. You also may see the opposite reaction. Somebody could get really big and get really angry, right? So, you know, it depends on what we've experienced either not just in our day, but in our week, in our lives over time of these kinds of attacks, really. And what may seem very small to the person who's delivering it or even to a bystander, the impact may feel really big. And we have to understand that context as well.
In law school, they call it the eggshell skull theory, which I don't agree with kind of in this context, but it's the idea that you don't know the path that someone has walked and what their background is generally, and then how the behavior kind of at issue is going to affect them, which may be different than it would be another person. Both reactions may be reasonable, but the background of that other individual is something that would be unknown to a person.
Mm-hmm. And you may not see a reaction with some people who have experienced a lot of harassment, assault, and abuse in their lives. They may have actually experienced numbing to some of this. So you'll see a reaction if this is an ongoing kind of harassment situation or an environmental issue in their workplace. You may see it in the other ways as far as workplace attendance or, you know, being able to work with other employees or even health effects, those kinds of things that we know come from stress. But you may not see it in the moment because they have necessarily, unfortunately, had to become more numb to some of those behaviors.
That's a really, really good point. And I think the attendance aspect of it is something that HR focuses on a lot and maybe not seeing the correlation between the two aspects. Let's do another hypothetical.
Sure. So actually, I'd like to do one where it's the same scenario, but the person provides some pushback. So do you want to be the person who makes the comment or do you want me to be?
Oh, you make the comment.
Okay. So in this instance, it starts with the same comment. But when you make your one-line statement, I'm going to push back.
Okay.
Okay? Yeah. And the idea for you is to try and stick to your message, not to go one way or the other, make apologies or excuses. Breathe and stay in your body and in your message.
Okay?
So, hey, Tawny, your new coworker is super sexy.
I really don't think that that's appropriate for the work environment.
Oh, but haven't you seen them? Oh, my God. I mean, whew.
Again, it's not appropriate for the work environment.
Well, but you know, we're outside work. We're just not going to even walk in yet. So I can say it out here. I mean, whew.
I'm going to pretend that the conversation's over right now, and I'm going to.
No, walk I didn't.
Away.
I wasn't trying to offend you. You're so sensitive.
It's not that I'm sensitive, but remember how we had sexual harassment training last month?
But this isn't sexual harassment. I'm not saying this to them. I'm saying it to you.
And now I'm telling you, I'm not comfortable with the conversation.
Oh, whoa. Okay. Wow. I feel like Well, I'm sorry. That wasn't my intention, you know. I mean,
no,
I would never
I get that.
Sexually harass anyone.
I get that. I think we should move on.
Nice.
But at the same time, I could see myself for the rest of the day being very
yes.
myself having that response. I would be anxious for the rest of the day mm-hmm. thinking that you don't want to be my friend anymore mm-hmm. and that our relationship will be hindered, and I don't know if I'm even a strong enough person to have been able to say that to someone who's a superior, who's in a position of power over me based off of fear as to mm-hmm. and the big R word. Well, there's a lot of big R words in this
topic.
Yeah,
retaliation.
But retaliation is what I would be significantly concerned mm-hmm. about there.
Yeah. So that brings in the context and also the issue of practice, right?
Yeah.
And the reason this is body-based training, right? Because you feel it, you feel the reaction, you feel your adrenaline that just rose. I'm sure you're feeling it right now.
It is.
So
no, absolutely.
Notice.
I have goosebumps
yep.
on my body because I'm kind of like, she just kept going. And I said, stop. Like, I was pretty clear, like, in my words, stop. Mm-hmm. And you kept going. And even though this was all a hypothetical, it was difficult without having the practice in that moment to know how to respond
sure.
to what you were saying.
Sure. And we don't usually ambush people like that. So it
but
builds
that's how
up.
That's how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Is it exactly what just happened? Is in real life, we don't, I want to say, we don't practice for these events occurring, and maybe that's one of the reasons why it is so difficult to respond.
Yeah, and that's the reason for the training, right? So that we can build these muscles over the course of a training and even over the course of several weeks of coming back and doing different levels so that people can practice those muscles. It's just like building anything else. You're building a comfort level. You're building resilience. You're building the ability to manage your adrenaline in that moment and afterwards. So knowing, okay, whew, that was a hard discussion or that was hard to do. What do I need to do now? Okay, I'm actually going to walk around the block. I'm going to drink water. I'm going to do some grounding technique, whatever it is, to shake that off and be able to move on with my workday.
We are talking to Clara Porter today, and this is HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Life's never perfect, but as realtors, we know living it in the perfect place can make a big difference.
Imagine
hiding from your screeching children in that spacious walk-in closet, watching the neighbor's dog poop on the freshly sodded grass you negotiated during closing, dropping your cell phone in the toilet of the spa-like five-piece bathroom again. So get the perfect place to house all of life's imperfections. Get Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
We're back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and our guest today is Clara Porter of Prevention Action Change. We're just doing some role-playing hypotheticals about how we deal with kind of responses to individuals who are continuing with inappropriate or potentially harassing statements and comments. And one of the things that we were talking about during it was, hey, we're not in the workplace. One of the things that Prevention Action Change focuses on, if I understand, Clara, is kind of the work environment itself and potential barriers to us being able to communicate in a certain way. Can you talk a little bit more about what you mean by barriers?
Sure. So in that bystander intervention type of scenario that we were doing, some of the barriers may be some that you pointed out, such as the position of the person that you're needing to respond to, your own position, who you are in relation to this issue, you know, what kind of repercussions may you be at risk for experiencing. And those can be different for different people, right? So as a woman, I could be seen as being too sensitive, or when I'm being assertive, being read as aggressive, any number of those types of things. Now, if I was a woman of color, particularly a black woman, I also might be seen as threatening. So there's different, you know, pieces that our various identities bring to us through other people's perceptions and their socializations, and those, you know, create barriers to our intervention for ourselves and for other people. I think some of the other pieces around bystander intervention in general, there's the bystander effect. So the more people there are involved in a situation or seeing a situation, the less likely someone is to intervene, because we're all kind of saying, I think it's wrong, but nobody's doing something. So maybe it isn't wrong. Maybe I'm misreading it. So that's where some of this training can really help to come and break through some of that bystander effect.
I think a lot of listeners would probably be a little bit confused about us using the term bystander intervention about the hypothetical that we just did, because did I intervene and was I a bystander, I guess, from a foundational standpoint. When we use that term, it doesn't mean that the person who is being directed or they're directing the harassing behavior at is physically present at all times, correct?
It doesn't have to be. And really, your you were both a bystander in that the comment was about someone else, but it was also directed or impacting you because it's a sexual harassment type of comment that can impact the workplace. So that workplace environment, which we're very much concerned about when we're talking about sexual harassment.
Now, when you talked about barriers, you use the term position. And when you use that term, are we talking both about physicality as to how the conversation is occurring, as well as our positions within the organization from a hierarchical standpoint? Or is it just one, and does one mean more than the other?
Yeah, I think in a lot of these verbal intervention type situations, we may be talking mostly about who are we talking to? What's their position relative to our position? But when we do broader workplace safety training, we're looking at what are the elements that are currently lending themselves to a safer and more welcoming workplace, and what are the barriers that are being presented to that safe and welcoming workplace. So barriers could be institutional barriers, such as we don't have proper policies and protocols for this or that situation, or our physical plant doesn't feel safe for these reasons. They also could be barriers that are presented by our position or our role within the organization. So my role as the sort of financial manager, for instance, sets up a series of expectations by other people, and that can be a barrier to my free communication or my feeling of safety in the organization. They can also be individual barriers. A lot of times we work a lot with folks who work in some kind of human services capacity. And so their ability, they're very oriented towards what the client wants, needs, and feels rather than what they do. So they're very reluctant to set boundaries of any kind, really always focused on the happiness of the client. And that certainly can cause concerns for safety. So we're looking at barriers broadly. And those communication skills that we then bring in are also broader than just bystander intervention. So it's assertive communication, it's boundary setting, it's de-escalation skills as well, and then the physical skills of how do I use my face, voice, and body to clearly present what I want in a situation or what I need in a situation, and also to intervene in situations that have a level of physical boundary crossing or threat.
So oftentimes when we talk about boundaries, or when I hear boundaries come up kind of generally in the work environment, one of the things I hear is, well, I didn't know how to appropriately say that a boundary had been crossed. What do you have some examples or ways in which someone can effectively indicate that a boundary has been crossed? Maybe without, it's hard because I want to say without offending the person who might have unintentionally crossed the boundary, but at the same time, that line between offending versus telling someone you've crossed a boundary.
Mm-hmm. Sure. A good example is a part of the training that we do on unwanted touch. So there's plenty of times all day that people will touch another person without permission. And that touch is, while it may be unwanted, it's not necessarily threatening. So the touch on the shoulder, the touch for women, particularly the touch on the lower back, which, you know, gets into some areas of concern for sure. Hugs. There's lots of different cultures in workplaces among colleagues where those things are very prevalent. And so we really teach people how to respond to those types of touches in ways that disengage you from the touch, but maintain, you might even do it with a smile on your face. Right? Someone's coming in for a hug, and we have a technique where you basically make a heart with your hands and just sort of come up and make contact with their hands and end up holding their hands and greeting them rather than being hugged. Very easy to do. It's a revelation for the folks we teach it to, yeah, to say, ah, that was such a relief. And the person who was coming in for the hug didn't even notice.
Yeah.
Right? So that low level is really important to keep my boundaries that I need, but also maintain this relationship. And of course, there are techniques if it does have a level of threat involved as well.
And I think those techniques, I could also see just as you were describing it, is also going to lead to the person on the receiving end kind of not having that fight or flight syndrome or symptoms after the event occurs where they're like, oh my gosh, do they think I hate them because I didn't let them hug me when that's really not it? Do I have to then explain what my behavior was?
Right.
And kind of that over-explaining. And I find myself doing that oftentimes where I'm like, oh no, it's nothing against you. It's just, and then you know, spend however many minutes you're going to spend mm-hmm. explaining something that really shouldn't need to be explained at all.
Yeah, that actually brings up something that we do explore quite a bit in the assertive communication, which is some of those verbal diminishers that particularly women, but actually a lot of men use as well. Words like just, or this might sound stupid, but, or can I, or I'm not sure, or I don't know when you do. Those kinds of filler and softening messages that really take away from the core of our point. And we give people the exercise of trying stripping those away from your email first. And it's much harder verbally, so strip it away from your email and then see what the responses are. And it's quite interesting, that change and what it can affect.
Thank you, Clara. I'm Tani Alvarez. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring local.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
We're back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and our guest today is Clara Porter from Prevention, Action, Change. We've been discussing bystander intervention generally, as well as barriers to intervening generally within the work environment and within society as a whole. Earlier in the program, Clara, we talked a little bit about retail and hospitality generally. Does Prevention Action Change focus in on that industry, and in what regard?
Yeah, we focus in on that through a collaborative, which in Portland is called Heart of Hospitality. And so that is a training that goes into mostly serving institutions like bars, restaurants, et cetera, and provides a 2-hour training to all staff, front of the house and back of the house, in recognizing and addressing particularly gender-based harassment. And that program is an offshoot of Safe Bars, which is a national program that does the same thing. Yeah.
Wonderful. I guess one of the things that's in the back of my mind right now, and that I could see a lot of our listeners struggling with right now, is it sounds great, but we have a limited budget, especially for training purposes. Why is this something that I should invest in?
Yeah, really, it's about helping employees to bring their whole selves to the workplace, right? If I feel targeted, if I don't feel safe and welcome in my workplace, then I can't bring my whole self. So you're really talking about retention. You're really talking about all of those elements that make people stick with a job and stick and become a career in a particular venue. What we see from empowerment self-defense in general is increased confidence, increased feelings of self-efficacy, increased ability to navigate and then, of course, negotiate various situations that might be of concern or simply might really I need to bring my whole confident self to that. So that's very relevant to the workplace for sure.
Does Prevention Action Change also work with organizations who have identified individuals who maybe need to have some polishing done, who maybe aren't hearing the things that their coworkers are saying about their behavior? Do you sometimes operate as an outside guide to say, listen, this is the way your behavior is being perceived by other people? And we talk so much about not my intention. It wasn't my intention to make you feel awkward. And that's something we hear so much. But really helping someone to understand how their behavior is being perceived. I mean, I could sit here with my hands crossed in front of my chest the whole entire thing, telling you I don't want to listen to anything that you're saying. And that might be how you perceive it. But how do we talk to someone about that?
Yeah, in our facilitation, we really work to make sure that everyone sees themselves in the room, including the person who may feel very threatened by the whole concept. So that's one of the reasons why we bring in, when we're doing the exercise around microaggressions and really brainstorming how those show up, we bring in age, we bring in social class, we bring in different issues that are going to be relevant to really pretty much anyone in the room. And we've found that we'll see that kind of body language in the beginning from certain people, and that most of the time they're engaged by the end of the training. Of course, that's also an issue with other people feeling safe in the room. There are other organizations, particularly that are addressing male identification and male sort of socialization around these issues. And Maine Boys to Men is one that comes to mind, who does really great work in that area.
Clara, thank you so much for being our guest today. I really appreciate it. And I know I have learned a lot just generally about bystander intervention and making sure that we have an environment or an atmosphere that generally is open to permitting and allowing people to speak up when inappropriate things are happening.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're listening to HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com.
And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Is your website ADA compliant? Hi, I'm Ben Ford from Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group with your Tip of the Week. You make sure wheelchair access ramps are clear. You make sure the bathrooms have the required equipment and features. But have you looked at the website? Since 2017, lawsuits against companies with inaccessible websites are on the rise. That's right, the Americans with Disabilities Act applies to websites. Complaints include issues such as pictures and video lack an alternate text so that visually impaired customers cannot understand what is happening on the page. Or you might have to click a yellow box to do one thing and an orange box to do something else, but if you're colorblind, you can't tell which box is which. But don't worry, there is help in the form of a standard called the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, or WCAG 2.0, and you want to be at access level AA. Don't know what that means? Call your web guy. If he or she doesn't know what that means, call Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.